did is we broke it up into bays, added more windows, and really kind of enhanced that back elevation that came through the comments of the DRC. So that's an example of the project being made better as we went through the process. The next one we want to talk about is the Allegretta Hotel. This one is kind of a donut, but you would enter there on the left where it says lobby. And then one of the things that makes the Allegretta Resort really special is that it doesn't feel like a regular hotel. It feels like you're walking into a palace or a big country estate. There's the guest room, there's the rooms, the living rooms. So that's going to carry through here as well. And then there's a theater in there, but the guest rooms are on the first floor and on the second floor in this one here. And this is a two-story one. And you can see that big courtyard with the grand staircase anchoring the end of it as you come through to kind of terminate your view through there. And this one here is another one that you can kind of see that this carries through that same type of architecture. And it's the third elevation from the top is the one that we received feedback from on the from the DRC. This was the one facing Dallin's. And you can see the same type of thing there. We wanted to dress that up, so we grouped windows together, put some different treatment on there, and added a logo on what was previously a blank wall that kind of ties into the logo on the other side as well. But you can see there's a ton of articulation, large patios. These are larger guest rooms than the rest of the areas, the rest of the hotels. And then just talk a little bit about this piazza that we're creating over here. So the Allegretta Piazza is an outdoor space between the Abbey and this little building here, which has the kitchen and a little bar area. So it's a shaded covered area there. And it kind of anchors one end of the piazza there. And then it carries that same type of architecture through there with the columns, the arches, the stones, the clay tile roofs carries through. And then the Abbey is a really special place here. You can see it's a traditional Abbey layout and configuration. And then the architecture, it's a stone building with the stone recessed arches, the decorative rosette windows, and the clay tile roofs. And then just real briefly, I'll talk about the villas. The villas are a little bit different resort or a different housing opportunity rather than just a hotel room. You might want to stay in a two-bedroom house. And so these, they're configured in a pinwheel fashion so that although they are conjoined, each of the four entrances feels really private because you're not like walking into a door next to someone else. It feels really nice and private. There's some outdoor space associated with each of these. And once again, the architecture has that stone feel, very similar, kind of an upscale look and feel to them. That's really the intent there. And then just one thing that's really important is that it's not just the buildings themselves, but the entire grounds that really enhances and creates that atmosphere. So even little things like the outbuildings, you know, like the pickleball court, there's a little storage room over there and some restrooms. And then the pool building has the pool bar and stuff. That same architecture and care and attention goes into those buildings as well. So it really is a full encompassing architectural look and feel to the resort. And I think that it's something that we're really excited to see coming. So with that, I'll wrap up the presentation, but happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you very much.
Tom, real quick, on that very upper right, I think it looks like 16, mm-hmm. That long vertical building right on the curve, upper right-hand corner. What is that exactly?
Well, it says it's a little bit to be determined exactly what that is, but it's a wine production facility because they do have the vineyards on here. So there would be some wine production and also the equipment yard would be back in that area there.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Mm-hmm. Okay. Also, there was originally, I think we were discussing some way to get off of Dallin's Drive to some of the properties off of Experimental Station with an easement. Did that ever get worked out or what happened on that?
It did. It's fine. It's part of this. There's an easement, not all the way down, but across in front of number 12 and 16, there's an easement that runs through there to connect through, and Warren can talk to anything that any plans beyond that, but I know that we've incorporated the easement.
There is a way to get back there now. Okay. Yeah. Good. Councilman Strong.
Yes, does the new design in any way affect the existing meeting rooms that are in the current hotel?
No.
So they are not going to be changed. They'll still
be
available as part of the whole convention center complex.
Yes.
Thank you.
How many total rooms did you end up adding to the project?
I believe the number is 93.
93 more rooms.
Correct.
And what is Allegretto currently at?
I think it's about 220.
220, okay. I had another question, and I just lost it. Any other questions though from council real quick?
I just have a couple comments.
Yes, well, questions only at this point. I'd like to give Doug an opportunity to come up if you'd like to say something about his project as well. Doug, would you like to say something?
Thank you.
Thanks.
Welcome.
Live? Okay. Good evening. I'm Douglas Ayers from the Allegretto Vineyard Resort. And I'd like to say a few words about the staff and the help that they've provided over the course of getting this done. Darren and Leslie and the team and Warren, it's a lot of work getting these things done, and they did a good job.
Yeah.
So
it's a beautiful project. On your phasing from first to last, what's the time frame, do you think, roughly? Are you kind of envisioning?
Oh, it's like 2 years per
section,
we think. Yeah,
that's gonna be a beautiful addition to your property already, so
thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Doug.
Good. I like it, keep it short.
Thank you.
Anyone, we'll open up the public, anybody wishing to have a question on this one, please come forward.
Hello, council. Mayor Sawyer, 510 9th Street here in Paso. Not that many years ago, I was a student at Cuesta, and I distinctly remember, you know, sometimes those parking lots would get really full, especially during peak hours of class. So I, back then, would park where the current parking lot is, run across Dallin Street, go to my class. About 90 minutes later, come back to my car, and, you know, Allegretto would leave these nice little cards under my windshield saying, oh, please don't park here, this is for guest parking only. So I guess what I would like to see, if this property that Allegretto is attaining is originally earmarked for Cuesta, if Allegretto would have a little bit more support for our students in this area pursuing higher education, you know, be a little bit more chill about if those parking lots are full during peak class hours, that if students park over there, that they, you know, are not being not necessarily harassed, but, you know, they just have a little bit more leniency or a little bit more understanding towards our local students. That's all.
Great. Thank you. Steve, welcome.
Thank you, John. Steve Iorio. I hunt a lot of birds in that section, a lot of birds. I'm just north of there. I really like what's going on. I'm concerned about driving access off of Dallin's, and I'm concerned about the when they started Allegretto, the street is wide up to their driveway, and then it steps down all the way to Dallin's. I think that whole road up Buena Vista should be the same width. And I think you should have some access off of Dallin's into that project. But I like the project, and I think it's a good thing for Paso.
Very good. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll close public comment. Anyone online?
No, sir.
Okay. Warren, we did have a question, and maybe we could address the street width on that Dallin's Drive. Doesn't that have a center lane? Or is it just two lanes?
There is a lane drop between Experimental and the entry to Allegretto. So that lane kind of becomes kind of a turn lane into Allegretto. So we start with two northbound lanes, and at the driveway we're down to one northbound lane.
Okay, yes. No, what I'm talking about, I think what Steve was asking was on Dallin's. As we turn off of Buena Vista, turn right onto Dallin's, getting off of that into the property, is that a two lane with some parking on it, or is that just strictly two lanes only?
I think it's two lanes with a with a center turn lane.
That's what I thought. There was a center lane on that, which would allow in and out much easier, kind of what we're going to hear on this Crescent Road project, too. So, okay. Yes, go ahead, Chris Beal.
I think this is a really nice project. Obviously, the land use is consistent with the neighbor. It makes a lot of sense. I think these are beautiful additions, and we need the meeting space. And I live in Paso Robles, so I don't go to hotels very often because I live here. But I had an occasion to go to an event at Allegretto and then have breakfast with some friends. And I was really amazed at all of the people that were around. It was a cold, winter, foggy day. And the place was filled with interesting people from interesting places. So congratulations in creating a very different experience here in Paso Robles, and I think this is a good addition. And I just want to express my condolences for the accident that involved your team member. So thank you.
Any other questions? Oh. I have one more before. Chris Belsch, do you have a question?
More of a comment.
Comment. Okay, let me ask this real quick. Warren, on the villas, are those restricted to less than 30 days, or can they be over long-term, in other words, and specific to TOT?
Yeah, everything is a lodging product, so that means it's restricted to 30 days or less.
Or less, right. Very good. Okay, Chris Bausch.
Just speak, looking forward to the additional event space, the events that I think most of us have attended out at Allegretto are always something to look forward to. The food is always excellent. The staff is always welcoming. It's a beautiful place. I'm sure the future additions are going to mirror all of that. Paso Robles is known to be a great place to come to, but we do lack event space, so I think this addresses that, and I think it'll continue to make us a destination place, especially for smaller venues and smaller organizations that need a beautiful place to come. So look forward to this.
So, Mariana? Yeah. I want to make a motion, but I'd like to start out by first saying thank you to Mr. Ayers for believing in Paso Robles. We believe in you, and you believe in us, and it's been a great partnership so far, and everything you're doing is exemplary out there as a facility and as a your community of workers and staff, and everything you do is, I would say, artful. You're like even when you opened your place and you're fixing the fountain upside down to look really good when we all came in for the ribbon cutting, you care so much about what you're doing, and you give your design and your ideas to the facility. So I want to thank you for that from Paso Robles, and it's a wonderful project, and I couldn't be happier than moving ahead and approving your project. So with that,
I think we have to make four separate motions, I believe.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Approve resolution 26XXXA, authorizing the addendum to the mitigated negative declaration and mitigation monitoring and reporting program.
Second.
Motion by Gregory, second by Beal. Discussion? Call for the question.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Yeah. I move that we approve resolution 26XXB, authorizing general plan amendment.
Second.
Okay, motion by Gregory, second by Beal. Discussion? We'll call for the question.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Introduce the first reading by title only, ordinance XXXX, amending the Paso Robles Municipal Code to authorize a specific plan amendment and rezone designation.
Second.
Motion by Gregory, second by Beal. Discussion? Call for the question, Melissa.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
And finally, approve resolution 26XXXC, authorizing development plan and conditional use permit for the project.
Mr. Mayor, just a point of question. We did a recommendation to add the following amended conditions to that motion.
Included in that motion.
Second.
Okay, a motion by Gregory, second by Beal. Call for the question.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
We're looking to get open, Doug. Let's go.
Thank you, Doug. Appreciate it.
Can I take a break?
You want to take a break? Okay. How about, 8:30. We'll be back. 10 minutes.
AM 1230, KPRL, and 99.3 FM, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton. Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice. AM 1230, KPRL, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton.
President Hoover, Mr. Chief Justice, my friends, this is a day of national consecration. And I am certain that on this day, my fellow Americans expect that on my induction into the presidency, I will address them with a candor and a decision which the present situation of our people impels. This is preeminently the time to speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly. Nor need we shrink from honestly facing conditions in our country today. This great nation will endure as it has endured, will revive and will prosper. So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Our greatest primary task is to put people to work. This is no unsolvable problem if we face it wisely and courageously. It can be accomplished in part by direct recruiting by the government itself, treating the task as we would treat the emergency of a war, but at the same time, through this employment, accomplishing greatly needed projects to stimulate and reorganize the use of our great natural resources. Hand in hand with that, we must frankly recognize the overbalance of population in our industrial centers, and by engaging on a national scale in a redistribution, endeavor to provide a better use of the land for those best fitted for the land. I am prepared, under my constitutional duty, to recommend the measures that a stricken nation in the midst of a stricken world may require. These measures, or such other measures as the Congress may build out of its experience and wisdom, I shall seek within my constitutional authority to bring to speedy adoption. But in the event that the Congress shall fail to take one of these two courses, in the event that the national emergency is still critical, I shall not evade the clear course of duty that will then confront me. I shall ask the Congress for the one remaining instrument to meet the crisis: broad executive power to wage a war against the emergency as great as the power that would be given to me if we were in fact invaded by a foreign foe. For the trust reposed in me, I will return the courage and the devotion that befits the time. I can do no less.
Willie Mays could do it all on the ball field, and he did it all with flair. He turned even routine outfield flies into graceful signatures with his basket catch. But the catch Willie made in the first game of the 1954 World Series was anything but routine.
Wirtz has the only extra base hit in this game, and it drove it a couple of runs.
It came in Game 1 between Mays' New York Giants and the heavily favored Cleveland Indians. Now in the eighth inning, with the score tied 2-2, two men on and no one out, Cleveland slugger Vic Wirtz strode to the plate. One sharp crack of the bat later, the ball was soaring toward the deepest regions of the Polo Grounds' cavernous center field.
There's a long drive way back in center field, way back, it is.
Broadcaster Jack Brickhouse was as amazed as anyone by what he saw.
Second, Dolby is able to go to third. Willie Mays just brought this crowd to its feet with a catch, which must have been an optical illusion to a lot of people. Is in center field. The ball itself, Russ, you know this ballpark better than anyone else I know, had to go about 460, didn't it?
It certainly did, and I don't see how Willie did it, but he's been doing it all year.
Willie Mays just made the catch of the day.
Willie's catch saved the game, setting the tone for the entire World Series. The Giants won Game 1 in extra innings and went on to sweep the Indians four straight. As it turned out, it was Willie's only World Series championship in more than two decades in the majors, and he did it by making the play that more than any other would define his dazzling career.
If you had not have fallen, then I would not have found you. Angel flying too close to the ground. Patched up your broken way. And hung around a while. Trying to keep your spirits up. And your fever down. Knew someday that you would fly away. For love's the greatest healer to be found. Thank you. rather see you up than see you down. So leave me if you need to. I still remember
most of the time, and the feeling is laid back. Palm trees grow and rents are low, but you know, keep thinking about making my way back. Well, I'm New York City born and raised, but nowadays I'm lost between two shores. LA's fine, but it ain't home. New York's home, but it ain't mine no more. I am myself to no one there, and no one heard at all, not even the chair. My cries, I am, said I, and I am lost, and I can't even say why. Leaving me lonely still, did you ever read about a frog who dreamed of
being
a king?
Okay, we'll bring it back, and then we are on public hearing. We'll open the public hearing for item three, the approval of a development plan for 24 unit residential units.
Well, except for the names and a few of the changes, if you talk about me,
height modification, removal of 10 over 30s,
the story is the same.
And one lot track map to be 10 over
30s. But I got an emptiness deep inside that I've tried, but it won't let me go.
You've already noted this is a residential project proposed at 420 Creston Road. You did open the hearing for this item on March 3rd, and the item was continued at that time. You did not hear a staff report or any public comments at that time. So the project is located at 420 Creston Road. You can see River Road there running somewhat north-south, and Creston Road, so just east of River Road. It's a property that has been vacant for many years. It is in the R2 zoning district. That's a low-density multifamily district. There is, I'll note, an oak woodland and a seasonal creek that drains to the Salinas River down at the southern extent of the property. There are 24 dwelling units proposed. They are each one is a four-bedroom condominium, and that is in 12 duplex buildings. So 12 buildings, two units in each, for a total of 24 dwellings. This project does include an affordable housing density bonus. The zoning would allow 20 density units on the site. One unit of those 20 will be deed restricted to a very low income household. That will be for 55 years. A very low income household makes 50% of the median income for the county.
That does, by state law, entitle the applicant to an additional 4 dwelling units, so 24 units are proposed, and 1 concession of a development standard. In this case, the applicant has requested to not build an on-site playground, which would be provided, which would be required for an entirely market-rate project. I've changed the orientation on you, so now north is to the left. That seasonal creek is there on the right side. There, as I've said, 24 dwelling units proposed. Each is a 4-bedroom unit. Each has an attached 2-car garage. And then there is a subdivision map that is airspace condos. So it's a single lot, and then through a condominium map, there will be each unit will be for individual sale. The project does meet its parking requirement, which the required parking is 53 spaces, 2 spaces for each dwelling unit, and 1 space for every 5 dwelling units for guest parking, which totals 53 spaces. There are actually 61 parking spaces provided. That, as I said, each unit has a 2-car garage, which totals 48 spaces, and then there are 13 uncovered spaces. Yeah, I have an animation there shown now in red. Along the front driveway, there'll be 13 uncovered parking spaces for overflow from each residence and then for the guests as well. I wanted to point out that there is a fire department turnaround. I think that was a question in one of the comments that we've received over the last few weeks for the project, both when it went to Planning Commission and before the hearing 2 weeks ago. There is a fire department turnaround, so the project, if a fire engine needs to respond to the site, there is a location for both fire trucks and the garbage truck to turn around to exit the site. So I'm not going to belabor the architecture because the applicant's architect is here, Rebecca Newman from Aris Studios, as well as the same architecture firm that designed the Allegretto expansion. So buildings 1 and 2 that face Creston Road, the closest buildings to Creston Road, will include porches that face the public right-of-way. And then this is a quick glance at the side and rear of the lot. So the garages will face internal to the site, and most of the units have their front doors on the side of the buildings. Here's a quick look at the colors and materials that are proposed. There are several different color schemes. Rebecca will go through these in more detail, but there's a combination of different, largely the same floor plans, but with some alterations to the exterior materials. The project is required to provide open space. They have opted to provide just private open space, which is allowed. So each unit has at least 250 square feet of private open space in a backyard. And in fact, each of those backyards is larger than the minimum. As I said or alluded to in a previous slide, a project of this size, if it was a completely market rate project, would have to provide an amenity, a playground amenity, sometimes called a tot lot. It would have to have 3 pieces of equipment. The applicant has requested to use their density bonus concession to omit the playground from the site. There is a condition of approval that would require the rear area of the lot, that undeveloped area, sort of between the residences and those oak trees, to be available for the tenants to use. You know, if someone wanted to fly a kite, there would be some area to explore for children, but it wouldn't be a formal tot lot on the site. There are 10 oak trees proposed to be removed with this project. The council approved a project for this site about 5 years ago, and that did include all of these, 9 of these 10 oak trees to be removed. Staff is not recommending that we sort of unring that bell. Unfortunately, the one tree that was intended to be removed, tree number 6, the large oak tree, was really, really a beautiful tree, was damaged in the river fire in 2020, and so it is no longer salvageable. So now all 10 trees are proposed for removal. As designed, none of these trees would survive the construction damage. A quick look at all these oak trees, and the oak trees are the reason that this project is here before the City Council. Typically, the Planning Commission could approve a project of this scope, but oak tree removals are the Council's purview. So trees 1, 2, and 3 are along this the front of the property. They're near the sidewalk and would be in the way of the future driveway. Trees number 4 and 5 are you can see tree 4 on the left has a fence growing in the middle of it, not the best for stability long-term, adjacent to multifamily housing. And then tree number 5 is in relatively poor condition, or in poor condition. It was near the building there. The image there on the right shows the structure that was burned in the river fire as well. And so neither the structure nor that tree, the tree are in good condition. Trees 7 through 10 are at the rear of the lot. They're all suffering drought stress, so none are in great condition, and the project was not designed to retain them. Finally, oak tree number 6. We went out to visit the site to see what this tree, because it had been such a beautiful tree back in 2020 when we processed that original entitlement. As we approached from the south, we saw a tree that looked really great, and we couldn't understand why it was being proposed for removal. But as we circled the tree, we discovered all of the fire damage, and you can see on the right the growth of branches along the trunk. It's just not a healthy tree, not stable for the future, and it's a real loss. To see that tree go. The project does include quite a few oak tree mitigation trees planted throughout the site, and so there will be new oak trees planted on the property, both in the rear of the lot in that kind of open area, and also in the formal landscaping around the houses. Also in 2020, when the council reviewed the previous project, it was Development Plan 1905, the applicant with that project requested that the utilities along Creston Road not be required to be undergrounded. The city council did waive that requirement and required installation of underground conduit so that if there's a future neighborhood undergrounding project, this project would be ready to go, and the wires could be run within the prelaid conduit. The draft resolution in front of you this evening continues that requirement, and so the resolution as drafted does not require undergrounding of utilities as required by the municipal code, but it does require the laying of that underground conduit. The city engineer has been talking with the applicant's engineer. There is in condition number 54 some language that made the applicant uncomfortable regarding rough grading. This project is intended to be completed in one phase. Rough grading, when we do rough grading permits, it's usually for a really large phased project, and so the applicant and the city engineer have come to the agreement that the word rough should be I always struggle with the word stricken. It should be removed from this condition of approval. So condition 54, staff is recommending the word rough be removed from the grading plan. So they would still have to have a grading plan approved by the city engineer, but not a rough grading plan. The project is exempt from environmental review as a Class 32 categorical exemption. This is a really classic example of where this exemption is appropriate. This is an infill site. We're getting housing where it should be right along the transit, right along our transit lines near downtown on an infill site. As always, the City Council has options. The first would be to approve the development plan, the site plan modification, the oak tree removal permit, and the tentative tract map by adopting the draft resolution in the that is presented in the agenda report. You could amend the draft resolution, modify and then adopt that draft resolution. You could refer the project back to the Planning Commission or to staff if you feel you need more information, or you could deny the project by adopting findings of denial. This is an affordable housing density bonus project, and so there are some limitations to the modifications the council can make. The courts have been very deferential to affordable housing density projects, when an applicant requests the concessions and the density bonus, the city has very limited options on rejecting those requests. Thank you. So staff is recommending, or I should say the Planning Commission is recommending that the City Council approve the project, and then staff is recommending that condition of approval 54 be amended to strike the word rough from the grading plan requirement, and that concludes staff's report.
Thank you, Katie. Questions of staff first? Councilman Bausch.
Katie, this helps fulfill affordable housing. It's good from that standpoint. The only question I have is that given tree number 6 that was damaged in the fire, are there any special precautions that should be taken in case we have another river fire and that fire comes up that draw? It just seems like a natural place. Does anything need to be done for that, or existing building codes suffice?
Building codes, and then, you know, obviously our fire department makes frequent efforts to mitigate fire within the Salinas River. But yes, the project will have to, you know, the units will have to have fire sprinklers in them. They'll have to have fire safe landscaping. Lots of built-in requirements for fire safety within the building and fire codes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions over here?
Yep.
Pro Tem Gregory.
Yeah, Katie, just a couple questions and clarifications. On the remediation for the oak trees, they're going to replant 29 oak trees. It doesn't say what kind of oak trees. So I'm rather keen on live oaks. And we've had other projects in front of us where we were able to say maybe half of them are that way. I read the landscape plan. They're going to irrigate them already. So that's something I guess we need to discuss with the applicant. Thank you.
Anything over? Chris Beal.
Great, thank you. And just to make sure that the community understands, because this is falling into the affordable housing kind of umbrella, there are a lot of things that we don't have authority over. So even though there's a bunch of units with 4-bedroom units, we can't say, oh, can you do a playground? They are legally allowed to use one of those for the concessions, right? That unless there were a significant finding or some problem, right?
That is my understanding. Of course, the city attorney is here to to confirm.
And it goes with the parking, too. We can't say, oh, they're 4-bedroom units. We think there should be additional parking. They have met the threshold. And our job is done as the city, essentially, right?
That's correct. So the state has said that residential projects have to be subjected to objective design standards, and we have an objective standard that they have to provide X number of parking spaces. They have done so and have actually, of their own accord, exceeded our minimum standard.
Got it. And then I know that there was some conversation about kind of the traffic study. I know they have staff here. We would defer that to another speaker, do you think? I want to make sure that everybody's clear on what's going on with the site distance issue.
You bet. So the city engineer is certainly available, and I believe the applicant's traffic engineer is also available online to talk to us this evening.
Great.
Okay. Katie, with a lot of the comments that we saw come in as far as this project, it was mostly that I saw about the parking, meaning, you know, 4-bedroom home, 2 drivers, more than that, maybe 3, possibly 4, and each having a vehicle of some sort. And I know that essentially, I think per code, they are physically overparked for what the code requires for this. And I think, again, one of the things that I was also brought up is that, you know, when you get density like this, in particular like short-term rentals, we require that every room have a parking space on a short-term rental. So does having a density bonus change the parking requirements on a project like this, or is it just per our city code?
So the parking, the applicant did not request a parking exception. So the parking that is required for this project is the standard required for any market rate or affordable project of this size and scope.
And then getting in and out of the project on the Crescent Road, we do have a center lane there, right? So they can turn, you know, eastbound and then also westbound to get going into the traffic if there's a way to do that. People were concerned about more traffic, obviously, and traffic flow. So I think now that we have Crescent pretty much taken care of, that center lane is going to help a bunch with this project.
Definitely. There is also a condition the applicant will have to work on site distance, and if the site distance can't be repaired, they will be limited to right turns only. That is, the expectation is that they will be able to address the site distance issue.
And the other thing, too, about this is basically a private, do they have like CCNRs? In other words, who's going to control the number of vehicles in the project? Is it a group? It's not the city, correct?
The project will have to have an HOA. In order to have a condo project of this size, you have to establish a homeowners association. I have not provided any conditions in the draft resolution that would limit the number of cars. If you wanted that to be a requirement for it to be in the CCNRs, I think that's within the realm of what the city can require, but I'm, as always, looking over to Elizabeth to make sure that's accurate.
So is there anything specific language that we have to put in there, Elizabeth, for making them do a CCNR with regard to parking, number of vehicles? Or is that up to them, essentially? In other words, we don't...
I think it's up to them, essentially, yeah. In this case. They've met our parking requirement. Mm-hmm. The density bonus limits our ability to impose additional requirements upon them. And so I think that they've satisfied their requirements.
Right. I think the city stays out of those kind of agreements. It's just that we parked it per our code, and it's up to them to enforce their own rules. Correct. So, okay. Chris
Actually, Beal. I'd like to weigh in on this point because it's important. We have a situation with another similar-ish project that's probably 20 years old. Same thing. They have garages. They have lots of spacing, parking. They met the rules. And what's going on is that there are a lot of restrictions in the CCNRs that says you can't park here, you can't park there. There are sort of internal restrictions in the CCNRs. Add that into people not parking in their garages because they want to use it for storage. It has really created a problem that is cascading and cascading and cascading. That's a problem for the people that live there. It's a problem for the neighbors. It's now a problem for us because it's taking a lot of time to figure out if there's anything we can do. So if there is something we could do in terms of a condition of approval to somehow to influence how these issues would come out in the CCNRs to try to prevent real problems, I would certainly be for that.
Is there a way that we could do a conditional use permit on the project to regulate things like that if they get out of control? In other words, those streets in there are obviously fire lanes. You can't park in them, but I'm sure you're going to see that happen. So how does the city get involved if there's a complaint?
I believe a lot of the, like as you noted, the lanes are too narrow for parking, and so they'll have to have red curbs.
Right.
If the fire department or the police department received a call. I assume that they enforce on private property in that way. I believe that's correct.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Then let's, any other questions here? We'll open up then to the public for any questions or comment on this item.
And the applicant does also have a presentation
okay.
if you'd like to
sure.
see it.
Sure. Let's do that. Let's get the app. Thank you. Welcome.
All right. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Good evening, Mayor Heyman and council members. My name is Rebecca Newman. I'm with Aris Studio Architects, and we're very excited to be here tonight. We've been working with Katie and the rest of the staff for over a year to bring this project to you here today, and have had a lot of really great conversations with the city, DRC members, Planning Commission, and I think we've made a lot of really great improvements to the project. And Katie has done such a great presentation that a lot of what I'm gonna share today is things that you've already heard. So let me go on to the next slide. So we are proposing 24 two-story townhomes. Now, it came up in Planning Commission, so I want to just add here that when I say townhomes, it's sort of the architectural model. These are two-story duplexes. They are for sale condos. Each townhome is approximately 2,000 square feet, four bedrooms and 2.5 baths. Each has an attached two-car garage, and there is surface guest parking and spacious private yards. Katie did mention it, but I just want to reiterate here that while the minimum for the private open space was 250 square feet or maybe a little bit more. We are providing very large backyards, much larger than that. We are also providing pedestrian-facing architecture facing Creston Road, and this was something that we worked closely with staff and DRC on. And so what this means is that you have front yards, front porches facing Creston Road instead of the tall backyard fence. And we also have provided walkways to Creston Road, so it makes it really feel like more of a neighborhood. And with that, the two buildings there, four units, they have their front yards, front doors, porches facing Creston Road, and they also have low horizontal fencing, so very approachable and not kind of segregating or separating itself from Creston Road. This is your typical floor plan. There's two different floor plans, but they're very similar. The only difference being that on the second floor, depending on the orientation of the building, the master bedrooms would be over the garage versus in the floor plan you see here, they're over the living space. But two-car garage, open living room concept. There are also, each building type has two different elevation styles. They use the same materials, which would be, we have a horizontal siding and a board and batten siding, and the next slide, I'll get into more of the materials that we're gonna be using, but we are using a farmhouse and craftsman style architecture. We have recessed windows with decorative trim, large eaves, decorative corbels, variety of materials, and we have added some additional articulation for the street-facing elevations, and that was a comment from DRC. The materials, very clean, crisp. Again, we've got our white siding, black trim, and then along the base is that we've got options for a brick or more of a kind of rough cut stone. And so within this complex, each building is going to be different. As Katie mentioned, we are proposing the removal of 10 existing oak trees, the majority of which are in poor, very poor condition. The red circles are the same ones as the green circles that she showed, and we are proposing the replacement of those trees with 29 replacement oak trees, and we are happy to substitute in the live oaks. And that concludes my presentation. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Rebecca. Yeah. Questions of the designer? Councilman Beal.
I have a couple. So are you planning on having an, thank you. I actually think this is a really interesting project. There are a few things going on with it.
But yeah.
Are you planning on having an HOA with
yes.
this?
Mm-hmm.
Got it, and these units are market rate for sale except for the deed restricted unit?
That's correct.
And do you, I'm curious, how long do you think it's going to take to construct, roughly? Like,
well,
we won't quote you on it.
Sure, thank you. We will be going through the plan check process with the city, which could take about a year and then maybe a year or two for construction.
Mm-hmm. And are you anticipating, in terms of the buyers, that they'd be owner-occupant buyers or that they'd be investor buyers, or what's your kind of view for this?
I would anticipate that they would be owner-occupied.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other? Yeah, Councilman Bausch, Rebecca? Hang on one more. Councilman Bausch.
Sorry. So noticing that the 29 replacement oak trees, a lot of them are spread out very close to the home. So are we worried about future growth and sidewalk destabilization?
So that is a very good question. One of the requirements when we were working through, this is a conceptual landscape plan, but one of the requirements was that we did disperse them throughout the site so that, you know, these homes would have oak trees in the backyard, but yes, we are very concerned. We would want to place them such that it didn't provide any problems with the structure or the infrastructure, things like that. And so during the plan review process, the locations would become more finely tuned so that they didn't have any implications.
And then just last observation, some of the oak trees are like in the parking area. So are we going to use permeable concrete? How are we going to address root zone issues for oak trees?
Sure. Again, this is preliminary, and so I think that for a parking area, we would probably not select an oak tree. And in terms of the permeable pavers, we are proposing the underground water chambers, and so the infiltration is taken care of there. I don't think we need to have any pervious paving, but that would be something that would be fleshed out in construction.
I think I'm more worried about the oak trees.
Certainly.
And the root zone.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Pro Tem Gregory.
Easy question.
Okay.
So I actually really like the way you guys have done the oak trees along the back side of the units, because that'll create a really nice oak view from the residences. So I think that's why I'm encouraging some kind of a matrix of oak trees, especially live oaks, so especially in fire areas. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll open up the public. Anybody wishing to address this item? Anyone online, Melissa?
No, sir.
Okay, we'll bring it back then to council for direction and or action.
You want to make
comments? Sure.
I'll make a motion when you're ready.
I think this is a really interesting project. It's got four-bedroom condos. That's very different than things that we have, you know, in terms it diversifies our inventory of housing. I think it's potentially a good product for families or even young professionals, right, that have different needs and maybe could get into home ownership. I am particularly interested in making sure that our local potential buyers have access to this and that they don't get, you know, kind of scooped up by investors. I don't know what authority the city has in this, but I know in the Planning Commission that was sort of a question that was asked, whether these were going to be owner-occupied or investor, and if there was anything the city could do. I just think it's a really important conversation overall as we're talking about, you know, are we building the kind of housing that our community needs, and does our community have access to the housing, or is it getting scooped up by people, investors that are going to be running it and things like that. So again, I don't know what our authority is, but I think it's a big question we should be looking at. But this is a nice project. It's close to downtown. It is close to transit. It could be very, very attractive for a certain type of resident, and could be an opportunity for a certain kind of resident. But yeah, I'm very interested on the HOA piece in making sure that we are not restricting, that we do not have rules on parking that's going to create a disaster, and or that we are maybe requiring that people use their garages, because I guarantee it's going to be a problem, you know, down the road. So I'm very interested in making sure that that happens here.
Great. Thanks, Chris.
Can I have Elizabeth address Chris's comments about who can buy these? And
so it's a price.